call on the ice stands. We gotta go.
Okay, fellas, we are set to go.
Let's roll, boys. Come on, let's get going.
We are kicking.
Here we go.
Both guys, 5 minutes each for fighting.
Watch the blue.
Play the puck.
We're not doing this.
Hey. After further review, it's the Scouting the Refs podcast.
Yeah, baby.
Here's your hosts, Todd Lewis and Josh Smith.
Okay, gentlemen, play ball. Let's go.
All right, guys, let's drop the puck.
Hey, Josh, let's thank everyone for taking a break from streaming the Taylor Swift music that has just dropped. I had no idea, though, that Taylor was making new music about hockey. It's fantastic. Have you seen the song titles on this thing? Florida, come on, Panthers, all over it.
Right.
Guilty as Sin, Fresh Out of the Slammer, and of course, Who's Afraid of Me? Now, go deeper into this. I mean, the lyrics in that song, don't worry, folks, we took out our teeth. Who's Afraid of Me? Well, you should be. You should be. You should be. This Taylor album is going to have the NHL blowing up.
Hey, it's like a player safety review. It just keeps going and going and longer and longer. I think they're up to 31 songs now. So we've got some extra time there. You get plenty of time to spin a few tracks during the next goal review or offside review. And I appreciate everybody who's pulled themselves away from Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you're listening.
Yes. And of course, the podcast is available on all of these same platforms, which makes it super convenient for everyone. This is the Scouting the Refs podcast. Please make sure you follow us on the social channels. You get Josh at Scouting the Refs on X and Instagram. I'm on X and Instagram at Todd Lewis Sports. Coming up on this week's episode, actual explanations. Throw it into reverse. Is it a penalty or even more? Another stick flip and hey, where's the puck? We had one of those and a few other things this week, didn't we?
Man, you give me flashbacks to the Patrick Kane game-winning goal in Philadelphia when they won the Stanley Cup and the puck, nobody sees it goes in. And then I think the puck mysteriously disappeared after that for quite a few years. So when we've got missing pucks, there's a lot of high drama around that, Todd.
A few things to note in that the Stanley Cup playoffs, of course, are about to begin. And if you go to the Scouting the Refs website, Josh has all the details on all the officials that are going to be working. And there's a lot of them that you want to check out.
Yeah, 30 and 30. We've got all the referees, all the linesmen, everybody who will be taking the ice. Now, it's a little bit different in the postseason, where we don't have necessarily a set unit, but we do have set pairs. So you'll see refs typically paired up throughout the first round. They'll rotate around different series, but the two officials, the two referees, the two linesmen are typically paired together. So it's a little interesting dynamic in how they work games, but that's how we do it in the playoffs. NHL doesn't want to do it in the regular season. They're interchangeable parts. They like to move folks around, but in the playoffs, we look for a little consistency. So keep an eye on that. And who gets paired up with whom? I think we have some interesting assignments. We've got a debut. We've got somebody working their first playoff game that'll be coming up. And nice to see Steve Cazzari on the roster. So obviously, Todd, he's got a positive prognosis, a positive outlook if they're expecting him to work games in the postseason.
Yes, and we should send congratulations as well to referee Mike Sullivan, who made his NHL debut this past week. You mentioned it last week on the podcast. I can't wait till referee Mike Sullivan is working a game with coach Mike Sullivan.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. We're going to have Sullivan. And I hope there's no drama, no arguments in the fights. The photographers will have fun captioning the photos. The broadcasters will have a great time with the Sullivan or the dueling Sullivans there. And of course, depending on what calls are made, fans of the opposing team will have all kinds of conspiracy theories over how the Sullivans have aligned against them.
Because, of course, they must be related going back, 50 or 100 generations. So, of course, that makes them biased. And
absolutely. It's a generational bias for you, John. Yeah,
absolutely. Okay. We should also recognize and send out sympathies and strength to the family and friends of former NHL referee Wally Harris. Passed away earlier this week. Refereed nearly 1,000 NHL games, 85 playoff games, worked 6 Stanley Cup finals, and had that spectacular mustache. He was 88 and one of the great names from the past.
Yeah. Great hockey official, great legend there. And, you think of the guys working in that era, the 3-man crews, it's one ref. There's a little more personality, whether you like it or not. But, it was a lot harder on those guys back then and a lot more mileage on them. He made a great career out of it, great official, and sad to hear of his passing.
Okay, first topic up on this week's podcast, the financial responsibility has been assigned to Kevin Shattenkirk of the Boston Bruins. In a game versus Pittsburgh, he was fined $2,734.88, which, based on his salary, is the maximum allowable under the CBA for shall we call it unsportsmanlike conduct, Josh?
It is. It's a little unsportsmanlike. And the league, I'm not surprised, issuing the fine, no matter how small it might be, for Shaddy here, for interfering from the bench. And not a big deal, a little whack, but this is the third time this season we've seen guys interacting from the bench. We had Zuccarello grab a guy. We saw, who was it, Gulli, who speared from the bench. So we've got a lot of bench versus on-ice activity, something the NHL definitely wants to cut down on. So I'm not surprised that this was a fine. Innocuous, not a big deal, nothing at all. Just trying to, you know, irritate a guy, get under his skin, but you still can't poke a guy from the bench. So no surprise there for Shaddy. And you know what? Knowing him, he'll gladly pay the fine to do this again.
Yes, undoubtedly. Okay, there was a penalty missed in Montreal. Juraj Slafkovský got away with the fancy stick flip to teammate Nick Suzuki. Canadiens captain lost his stick in front of the net. Slav does him a solid, tossing it in the air. Got away with it because this is a penalty, or should be.
I love this move. I mean, it's super skilled. It's super talented. It's super handy to give the guy his stick back, but you're not allowed to do it. And unfortunately, the NHL likes to reward skill. They like to have players showing their talents on the ice. But Rule 10.3 says a player gets penalized if he throws or shoots a stick to a teammate on the ice. It has to be handed to him. You can't play with two sticks. So you really can't even slide it or push it along the ice. You have to leave it there for the player to pick it up. The guy can go and get one from the bench, but you can't flip it up. And sometimes they get away with it. This time they did. Sometimes they call it. It's look, no one's going to deny that it takes a ton of skill, talent, and ability to pull that off. And it is always an impressive move, but it should also always be a penalty. Sorry.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see if it gets caught in the future. The weirdest one from this past week, I think, happened in the Flyers and Capitals game. There's a shot on goal from Philly that is directed towards goaltender Charlie Lindgren. And I guess Kelly Sutherland was thinking the puck had either gone over the glass or Lindgren has it smothered and caught up in his paraphernalia and blows the whistle. However, the puck is high up in the air. Nobody sees it fall, and it bounces off a Philly player, then touches Lindgren and winds up in the back of the net. So everybody thinks, oh, maybe we got a goal. However, that was not the case after a lengthy review here.
No, and this is, I mean, first of all, I'm not going to blame Sutherland for this one. You can't really give him a hard time. Look at the other players on the ice. Everybody's body language appears like they believe that Lindgren has the puck. You know, he goes for the puck up high. His gloves are up, head high. It's not surprising, or it wouldn't be surprising for him to have caught the puck and trapped it there. So I think that's what everybody's looking at in this case. And then the puck pops out of the sky. So I'm not going to blast Sudsy for the call there. I think he lost sight of the puck. He blew the whistle. That's what the officials are trained to do. When you look at the review, and I'm glad that they did just to make sure they get the call right, you have the difference, and I know folks get frustrated with the difference between intent to blow, which is when the official deems the play dead, and sometimes the play can be dead before the whistle, and then there's a continuous play, and that's what this one was, where you're looking to see if the puck entered the net as the culmination of a continuous play where it was unaffected by the whistle. So if the whistle sounded or not, did it make a difference? If the whistle blows and guys stop skating, or Lindgren eases up on the play, or anything like that, well, then the play was affected by the whistle. Had the puck hit Lindgren, gone up in the air, the whistle sounds, and it drops straight into the net, I think it would have stood. It would have stood. Standed. What am I doing here, Todd? The goal would have counted. Because it would have been a good goal. Apologies to Jeff Merrick there on a good goal, but it would have been a goal because the puck would have gone in unaffected by the whistle. Once you've got a situation where it's hitting another player or the goaltender is easing up or putting himself out of position because of the whistle, you change the dynamic there. So it was not a continuous play because it hit the Flyers player and went in. Had it gone straight in, up in the air, right into the net, I think we would have seen a goal here. So I think they got the call right based on how it was called on the ice and via video review. Obviously, Sutherland would have preferred not to have blown the whistle in the first place, but he made the right call, and you can only call what you see. And what he did not see was the puck.
And that has happened so many times this year that an official loses sight of the puck, even though it hasn't been completely smothered by a goaltender or other players. This is how you have to officiate the game. And we've seen the continuous play rule played out as well, where a goaltender stops the puck, but then it dribbles through as the whistle is being blown. It counts as long as it doesn't contact another player or get pushed in further.
Right. And I think both rules need to exist because you are going to have situations that apply both ways where a goal is scored, even though the whistle already sounded, or a goal is scored, but the whistle hasn't yet sounded. I think the league needs both of those. And, you know, there's a human element, right? There's people involved. So there's a delay in getting the whistle up there. And sometimes, depending on the situation, this is why we had the situation room to leverage, to conference with, to discuss the play and see what really happened here. I mean, look, the officials are getting it right 90% of the time when it comes to blowing the whistle, stopping play. It's happening all game long. So on those rare situations where we have a different type of play like this one, or where it is a continuous play, or where, like you said, Todd, the puck's trickling in and it really didn't matter that the whistle blew or not, I'm glad that the league is taking the opportunity to get those calls right.
Okay, some situations in the Pittsburgh and Nashville game. Pittsburgh on the receiving end of not one, but two overturned goals because of coaches' challenges. Both Michael Bunting and Lars Eller cited for having a skate in the crease, interfering with goaltender Yussisaro's stick, which made it impossible for him to play his position and make the stop. So first off, we have asked for better explanations about reviews and why goals are not allowed. So let's give credit where credit was due. There was a little more explanation provided by the league on these as to why there was no goal allowed because of the skate in the crease and it interfered with the stick. So let's give that credit where credit's due. But again, tough calls, but I think they're the right calls.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unfortunate when you see multiple reviews go against the same team. And then you see that it's for a similar type play. And, you know, it almost reinforces the league's ruling here. And there's our buddy Gord Dwyer there taking a second look at it and relaying the news to the upset fans in attendance. But when you've got a skate in the crease, whenever you're in the blue paint, you are running the risk that you're preventing the goaltender from playing their position. And whether you're making contact or you're preventing him from moving to where he needs to get to, you've got the potential for a goal being disallowed. And I think they got it right in both cases here. I think it's unfortunate that the Pittsburgh team didn't adjust and try to push themselves out a little bit. Stay out of the blue paint. Stay in the white paint. If you're in the white paint, you can get away with this type of thing. But as soon as you're in the goal crease and you're preventing the goaltender from getting to where he wants to get to, you get in the way of him making a save. It at that point, it doesn't matter if you're making contact or he's running into you. The crease is his territory, and you're going to get that goal disallowed. So they got it right, but I don't think the Pens fans were too happy about that. It didn't end all too well.
No, not particularly well. So another goaltender or goal challenge, excuse me, from this past week. It was during the Islanders and Rangers games, and I'm watching the broadcast, and PK Sumed made an interesting point on the overturned goal. It was because of an offside. The Islanders player was, shall we say, contacted, shoved, nudged, mauled across the line as the puck was being brought into the zone. Rangers challenged. It was offside, but to PK's point, there was no interference penalty on the play. This could have and probably should have been an interference penalty, but you cannot call a penalty from a video review.
No, it's one of those plays where, like you said, Todd, the officials might be like, hey, would have, could have, should have called something here. We didn't call it live, so we can't call the penalty afterward. When we're looking at it, obviously the Islanders player is offside. You know, he's looking at the Rangers guy like, look what you made me do. You made me enter the zone ahead of the puck here. But we can't call the penalty via video review, so you don't have that option. What I was waiting to see, and I don't think this has come up before, is whether or not they would still count the play as offside. Because the rule, when it comes to an offside challenge, is purely focused on, was the player offside? What did he precede the puck into the attacking zone? The interference rule that comes into play here, 56-2, is going to be a penalty for doing this. But that's not necessarily part of the video review. We can't video review for a minor penalty, and it doesn't specify whether or not the player should be considered offside or not. So when it comes to video review for offside, they're looking to see the position of the player in the puck. I don't believe, and based on this ruling, I think that supported here, I don't believe that they're evaluating whether or not we had an interference penalty that caused the offside. So there's no question the Islanders player was offside, but when they review for an offside challenge, can they say, we have a penalty, let's not rule this guy as offside? You know, we have it in goaltender interference. If a player was pushed into the goal crease by an opposing player, we can consider that as not contact initiated by the player that was pushed in. But we don't have that part in the rule when it comes to reviews for offside. So this was an interesting situation to see how it played out. There's no question there's contact. Did you push him? Is it incidental contact? Either way, the Rangers player was responsible for the Islanders player going offside. So I was curious to see how this played out. And it looks like they're doing it by the book. Islanders guy in the zone. We don't care how you got there. We can't call the penalty, but he was offside.
Are you insinuating there might be a little gray area or even a loophole in the NHL, Josh?
You know, there are so many games. And man, I think Dave Jackson said this on one of the ESPN broadcasts the other day. There are so many situations that happen over the years. The NHL rulebook does a pretty good job of capturing most of them, but it will never capture all of them. And the more we put in there, you know, the rule book sometimes is vague and sometimes is specific. And like I said, I don't think I remember an offside with a pushed player, which again, we have to decide, was he pushed? Was it intentional? Was it incidental contact? But I don't recall an offside coming down to this before. We've seen them when a guy's going off and changing or getting on the bench. And those are covered in the rule book for offside, onside, but the push is covered as an interference penalty, not necessarily in the offside rule. So yes, Todd, the rule book, I would say, has a few gaps, a few opportunities here. And one day the league might want to consider fixing
it. Because you know it's going to come up at some point again.
Okay. And until then, we will just tolerate it the way it is.
There you go. A couple of big hits that we should touch on this past week. One from Joe Valeno of the Detroit Red Wings, running over Timothy Liljegren of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He got 2 minutes for this infraction. I might have given him a little bit of a stiffer penalty than just the 2 minute minor.
I thought so. Look, this is a dangerous hit. It's numbers all the way. He's pushing his head into the boards there. I mean, you look around like, what's the call? I mean, of course, this is a penalty. Could Liljegren have protected himself better? You know, he makes a turn at the last second and puts himself towards the boards, trying to protect the puck. Maybe that contributed to it, but I don't know, Todd. I would not be against NHL officials calling this when you have that headfirst board. I'm going to call it pile driver, but you're driving the guy's head in. I wouldn't be against them calling this as a major, reviewing it, and then opting to downgrade it to a minor. I know the league's focus is not on officiating via review, but when we've got situations where you get a guy on a dangerous play, regardless of whether there's an injury or not, but you see the head contact into the boards, you see the shove, I'm okay with the major call. Let's reduce it. If you think Liljegren contributed to the contact, if you think his body position changed, fine, downgrade it. But I probably would have been okay had they called this a major, taken a second look, and just made sure they were getting it right.
The other big hit came in the game with Tampa, Washington, as Nick Jensen is lugging the puck through the neutral zone, trying to make the red line to avoid an icing. He is waylaid by Michael Eisenmont and sends him flying and crashing into the boards. It looked terrible. Stretcher comes out, Jensen goes off, and he's hauled away. Fortunately, though, he was well enough to leave with his family after the game. So that was the best news. Now, it's a penalty for sure. It's not a 10-game suspension or a lifetime suspension the way some were suggesting, but I don't know. Is it more than a minor penalty? What should be the right call here? I'm not 100% sold on this one yet.
I mean, you look at Eisenmont after the hit. He's like, hey, man, I know I did something bad here, but it's almost one of those situations where you said it right, Todd. It's a penalty, but you're like, don't blame me for the injury on the play because how much did his hit contribute to it? I'm looking at it as an interference minor. Maybe a boarding minor. He's dangerously positioned far away from the boards when that shove takes place. So you're definitely putting a defenseless player in a dangerous spot. And that's the gist of the boarding call. So I don't know that it escalates to a major penalty. When we're looking at that, it's based on the degree of violence of the contact with the boards. It was a rough hit, but I don't feel like it was particularly violent. I don't feel like it was particularly aggressive. He's trying to finish a check. He's doing it. He's making a poor decision on the placement and the timing. But I feel like this is a minor penalty to me. I don't think it's a major. I don't think it's suspension. Probably not even a fine, which we have to keep separated because the injury is unfortunate. It's a scary hit. It doesn't look good. But the hit itself, I don't think rises to the level of supplemental discipline. And I think that's where we draw the line on, is it the hit or the act, or is it the outcome and an injury? We never want a player to get injured on a play. But if it's a legal hit, or in this case, an illegal hit that didn't rise to the level of a major or a match or supplemental discipline, I don't think we can come down harder on Eisenmont. Yeah, it was a poor choice. Yeah, it deserved a penalty, but I don't think it's anything more than that. And like you said, Jensen leaving with his family was the best thing to come out of this, because the injury coming out as a result, that's the scariest part. So I'm glad he was okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you made a really good suggestion there, because the puck is gone, so it could be interference. And because of where and how he lands, too, I'm good with a double minor, actually, if you called it that way.
Oh, I can't call a double minor for this. We've got, remember, and that's a great point, though. We've got specific rules in the rule book where can you call a double minor? Where can you call a minor penalty? Which situations, like high sticking, can actually result in a double minor? For boarding, you're looking at a minor, major match. You don't have the option there, and you can't give him an interference call and a boarding call for the same hit. So you've got to really pick. And in some cases for the officials, one like this, it could go either way. You could look at it as a late hit, but you're not going to do double jeopardy. You're not going to punish him with two penalties for the same hit, even if they could fall under two categories there.
Maybe you should be allowed to. Again, we're finding loopholes left and right here.
Late hit is interference, and he contacted the boards dangerously.
Yeah,
you could make an argument for that. But Todd, I think if you're going to make the argument for two penalties for the same hit, that opens the door for me for, well, then what about a penalty and a penalty shot?
Oh,
for a player break? If you didn't score on the penalty shot, maybe you should still get the penalty. I don't know.
Oh, this is an off-season discussion podcast all on its own, I think. Okay. The other hit that got an awful lot of attention, and you had a great social post on it, was the reverse hit from Shane Pinto, the Ottawa Senators, on Matt Rempe of the New York Rangers. They're pursuing the puck, and Pinto pulls up so far short. I was amazed that there was so much room between him and the puck. Does the reverse hit on Rempe, and then Rempe winds up getting a penalty because he trips down Shane Pinto. So the questions here are, is the reverse hit legal? Should it be legal? How close do you have to be to the puck? What's the interpretation? Are all reverse hits illegal? Should they be? I'm not sure where you want to fall down.
I'm going to start with the last part there. Are all reverse hits legal? No. And this one shouldn't be. There are legal reverse hits. And I think when we look at what players mean by a reverse hit, or what fans even think of as a reverse hit, you're bracing for impact, and your goal is to brace so that the player attempting to hit you gets the worst of the collision. Now, you're in possession of the puck, you're eligible to be checked, you're not legally able to check the attacking player, but you can brace for impact. So you can put yourself in a position where your foot is planted, your shoulder is up, and you're going to explode up at the point of contact. You're not making the hit. You're just bracing for it and exploding up when contact is coming. In this case, this is an illegal reverse hit. This one never should have counted. I mean, the puck is gone. It's beyond the goal line at this point. Rempe's trying to make a play on the puck. He's pursuing it. And what you have here is textbook interference. You're hitting a player not in possession of the puck. So by delivering a hit away from the puck, even if you happen to be the puck carrier, this is no longer a reverse hit. This is interference. So I think not all reverse hits are equal. I think far too many go unpenalized. If you've got the puck, if I'm along the boards and somebody's coming to hit me and I brace and push my shoulder back into them, great, that's fine. But the second I give up the puck to make body contact or initiate it against a player who is not in possession, this is no longer a reverse hit. It's interference. So the right call on Rempe for the trip there, but that shouldn't have happened. And that wouldn't have, because it would have been a completed play at that point had Pinto been called for the interference on the reverse hit, which in this case, Todd, was deserved. You can do it legally. Pinto did not.
I agree. I think that definitely was worthy of a penalty. Congratulations to Tampa Bay Lightning forward Nikita Kucherov for capturing the scoring title. And one of his other skills is delivering nasty elbows like this one. There was no call and no call from the Department of Player Safety on this one, which was a little interesting.
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, look, there's an intentional elbow coming up right there to Tom Wilson. And sure, you don't have a whole lot of Tom Wilson fans. I get it. I saw some sports writers, which kind of frustratingly tweeting out, well, karma. And, Wilson got what he deserved on this play. Look, whether you like him or not, you can't let a guy get away with an illegal hit. And there's no question. This wasn't accidental. This wasn't bracing for contact. This wasn't anything other than, I mean, throwing that right elbow up into Wilson's face. So this clearly a missed call. And yes, Kucherov's mad at the earlier hit. You want to call that for interference? Fine. Maybe that should have been a minor as well. But you can't do this. And I was surprised that player safety did not come down with a fine for this one. This is not suspension worthy, but definitely a fine to say, come on, you can't be doing this out there. I don't care that you're the leading scorer in the league. And yes, you can stick up for yourself, but you got to do it legally. And you can't elbow a guy in the face. And you see him look over his shoulder. I mean, there's no question of his intent on the play. So I was a little disappointed in player safety, because that one, to me, yes, Kucherov sent a message, but player safety also needed to send a message there on an intentional elbow to an opponent's face.
Hear, hear. One more to kind of chuckle at, but could have been serious. Fortunately, it wasn't. It involved Dean Blandino does his best to avoid the puck, but fortunately...
Oh, we're switching sports here. We're switching sports here. You want Dean Blandino on poor Brandon Blandino. So.
Excuse me.
Hey, you know what? We're in the officiating world, so I'm going to give you partial credit for that one, Todd.
Thank you.
It's close enough.
Back the other way, broken up.
Oh, what?
By Bernard.
Down he goes. Holy cow. It was a good play by Blandina to try to dodge a bullet there, but the better play came from New York Rangers defenseman Adam Fox. Puck's coming up the boards. It's a clearing attempt, and Fox gets a glove on it. So Blandina doing his best attempt of self-preservation there. Dodged a bullet. You want to get out of the way. It looked like he got hit by a bullet the way he goes down. But Adam Fox saving him on that play. So all's well, except for the fact that Blandina was definitely buying the first round for the officials after the game.
Well, yes, and understandably so. Good for him, and nice of Adam Fox to save the officials there. We're at the best time of the year. The regular season is over. The Stanley Cup playoffs are getting underway. There's new Taylor Swift music. I guess the only thing left to see, Josh, is whether or not the officials completely discard the regular season rule book and bring in the playoff booklet for rules right away.
When they do, are you ready for it?
Good stuff, man. We're to work.
Get in the box. It's the Scouting the Refs podcast. Read more at scoutingtherefs.com. Follow Scouting the Refs on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Email the show at heyref@scoutingtherefs.com.
You're good, my book.
Subscribe, share, and keep those sticks down.
That's good play.